Welcome to another edition of the College Faith Podcast, sponsored by Global Scholars. This is Stan Wallace, your host, and my guest today is Dr. Roger Parrott, president of Belhaven University, now for over 30 years. Over these years, he's thought much about the value of a college education, how higher education has changed, in some cases very dramatically, and the real cost of a college degree. So I've invited him onto the show to share some of his wisdom with us. Roger, welcome to the show.
It's a treat to be with you. You know, I really admire your work in with Global Scholars and that you're helping Christian families make this most important decision about college. That's a song that I love to hear singing. And so what a treat to be with you.
Well, thank you. You're the longest serving Christian university president in the nation, as I understand. So wanted to have you on because you've got years of experience in these kind of questions. And so looking forward to you sharing some wisdom from the years as parents and students think about these kind of questions. I appreciate that you are the president of a very important Christian university, Belhaven University. I love what you're doing. Your job is to promote the school, a worthy task, and I hope you're going to do that as we talk. But I'll also ask you to put on your objective, maybe even your scholarly hat, and in our conversation, kind of find that middle ground between, extolling the virtues of Belhaven, but also being objective and sharing some of the other things that we ought to be thinking about as we think about the university years.
You bet. And I'm a great believer in Christian higher ed. I'm a great believer in education. They can't all come to Belhaven. I couldn't take everybody who's listening. So I haven't got room for everybody, but we do have a good thing going. We talk a little bit about that, but yeah, I've been around this a long time. I started in college presidency probably too young. I was 34. So this isn't on video, but I don't look as old as that sounding with that introduction. but my father and my grandfather were also Christian college presidents. So
really?
I'm third generation. And so the kinds of questions you're asking for these families are what I've lived with my whole life because I grew up in this business and I've been around it and I know every nook and cranny of it.
Wow. You may be the only person to have that moniker of third generation university president. I'm not sure, but that's I've never heard of that before.
We think so. Yeah, there are a lot of second generation, but the Chronicle of Higher Education couldn't find another third generation. So it is unique. And I happen to work at my grandfather's desk that he had when he was a president back in the 1930s, which is really nice to have kind of that history every day when I come into the office.
That is amazing. Well, then, first thing I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on is how higher education has changed during your tenure.
You know, it's remarkable because most people think of higher education as a very stable, kind of unchanging, slow-moving glacier that never shifts. And moms and dads look at campus where they went, and they look, and the campus looks the same, and the sports teams look the same, and et cetera, and they think, well, I have my kids go back there. It's a totally different place inside, completely different. And it is, to me, pretty overwhelming how dramatically it's changed. And I really summarize it in this way, that in the public arena, higher education has come down to four priorities that all start with the letter S. Size, sizzle, sports, and status. And if you watch what they promote and what they encourage, it's all about size, sizzle, sports, and status. And that is what drives them. That's why students go there. The ranking of a party school is valued. It's not discounted by institutions because they want that because it attracts students. It's all part of that ethos that what higher education has become to them. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, for Christian students in the classroom, it's not that they're just don't share Christian values. It's that they can be anti-Christian. They can be attacking on Christians. And so I worry about some of our students who are going to a school that mom and dad went to, and it was pretty good when they were there, and it wasn't anti, but it has changed in nature. you know, at Bellhaven, our contrast is we focus on four characteristics that start with the letter C: character, curriculum, caring, and Christ. And I'd probably also add community into that as well. Mm. And when those are the driving principles, it's just a different experience. And at Christian colleges across the country, you know, and there are 150 of them or so, those are the kinds of things that are such a contrast, but you don't see it until you get in the classroom, until you get to know the faculty, until you really look behind the curtain and understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I am fearful for where higher education is going, because the valueless foundation on which much of it is built is going to deteriorate us culturally and in so many other ways. It's scary.
Yeah. So I'd like to ask you about that. First of all, do you have any insights on how we got here, how universities in the last generation have shifted so much, and if that trend will continue, or if you see any correctives on the horizon?
I don't think there are correctives on the horizon. I think it's getting worse. You know, Texas A&M just paid $150 million to get rid of their coach and coaching staff. $150 million. Can you imagine what that would do to be invested in first-generation college students? What that would do to be invested in quality of academics? But that is what drives them, because they didn't win enough games. They're going to spend a whole bunch more than that to get the new coach. But that's what they're willing to pay just to have the prestige of it. And the athletics, and I love college football. I'm a huge college football fan, and my team's in the national playoffs, and they're playing on Saturday against last year's national champion. So I love what can happen in that arena, but it's got to be within reason. It's got to be within balance. It's got to be within the content. And public universities have lost it, because that's where the presidents and the leadership gets graded. And about the size, it's all about the bragging rights. And I mean, LSU down here spent, you know, $5 million for a lazy river swimming pool. I mean, really nice to have, but is that really the priority of where higher education ought to be? And so we've gotten so attracted to the trinkets that the quality of what goes on in the classroom is so far down the priority list. It just doesn't matter. So faculty can scream and holler for it, but it's not what moves the dial for donors and for those in leadership in these big flagship institutions. And so how we got here, I think it's a slow drift. It's like anything. I mean, how did Christian higher education deteriorate? I mean, Harvard was founded to train pastors, of course, as we all know, and it slowly moved away from that mission. And that's why Yale was founded, because Harvard got too liberal. And so Yale was going to be the Presbyterian version. It's going to be a lot more, Princeton got a lot more, traditional. Well, they've all moved away. It's slow, little incremental changes. And as that gets rewarded, then it just goes further and further. And so that's where the contrast, I mean, when I got into Christian higher education 35 years ago, I did not very often bring up the contrast between us and state universities, because there was still a lot of good going on. But the contrasts have gotten so dramatic, even in a state like Mississippi now, when we're deep in the Bible Belt, and even in a place like this, the contrasts are pretty remarkable. And you get into some other states, and it's night and day different.
Well, talk to us a little bit about the spectrum of Christian colleges. You've distinguished Christian from the pluralistic a bit, but what would be the spectrum of those schools that identify as Christian, and how do you understand those differences?
Yeah, they run across a spectrum, and people need to understand that there are a lot of schools who call themselves Christian that may or may not be in what you're really looking for as a family for education. There are the historical Christian schools. A lot of the mainline denominations, their schools were founded as part of the denomination. they like that historical Christian foundation, but it's not taught in the classroom. It's not considered in the hiring process. It's not put into the curriculum. In fact, often it can be pretty aggressive anti-Christian. And then you got schools way at the other end who tend to be very dogmatic and fundamentalist, and what we believe is the only option. There's no dialogue. There's no discussion. You live our way. You do it our way. And there's no room for the kind of growth that will stand up to the tests of life. And so finding that school in the spectrum is really critical. You know, I always tell families the first question to ask is, what's the name of their Bible department? If they call it a Bible department, you're probably okay. If they call it a religion department, run the other direction. And so look there.
Why is that? What's the distinction?
The schools that have a religion department are not going to have a Christian focus of teaching. They're going to see religion as a discipline of scholarship, and comparative religions will be more their focus than it will encouraging Christian teaching. You know, where Bellhaven, if you study biblical studies, I mean, we're gonna teach from a foundation of traditional, in our case, Reformed theology Orthodox belief and prepare you properly for that. You know, I talked to one of our Bible professors the other day, and he said, you know, you told me when I started, he'd been there about 10 years, you told me when I started in our introductory courses, teach them to love the Bible, not to just know the Bible, but to love the Bible. And that would be my desire, that, you know, if a student's taking their required freshman sophomore courses in Old Testament, New Testament, if they end up loving the Bible when they're done, they may not be able to quote you all the books and all the stuff. That's okay. But if you go through a course and you go, well, I never want to do that again, then they're going to put the Bible down and be done with it. So yeah. I'd look at religion identifier. I would look at the hiring requirements. I mean, for CCCU school, Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, all faculty must be professing Christians of Orthodox faith, evangelical, whichever term you want to use. I would look at that, and then I would look really, and this one's a new one. A lot of our Christian schools are having trouble defining what it means to be Christian, and they're becoming more political. So they're defining themselves as God and country type schools, rather than really founded on biblical principles and letting that guide. And I understand where they are, and they're getting pressure in this political climate to take that kind of position. At Bellhaven, again, we're very different. We're not political. We talk a lot about being a campus full of grace and truth. And Christian colleges tend to be really good on truth. But unfortunately, in the Christian world, we've gotten so strong in our truth, we hit everybody over the head with it. Nobody's listening anymore. Mm. But, you know, Jesus was full of grace and truth. In fact, John, who was Jesus's closest disciple, when he's asked to describe him, he said he came full of grace and truth. Well, he said grace on purpose, because they expected him to be full of truth. He was a rabbi. He was a teacher. But he was as committed to grace as he was to truth. And that's where we are. We want to be as committed to grace as we are to truth. And so we want to accept and love students as they are in Christ and how God designed them for their role in the world. I told a group of prospective art students today who are here for our Discover Day, I said, every single one of you is different. Our goal is not to build you into our cookie cutter program. Our goal is to find your gifts and your strengths and bring that out, because that's how God made you, and that's what we want for you. So those kinds of issues, I think as you examine schools, they do run across a wide spectrum. I mean, there's a big, well-known online school now, which has been fined by the federal government. And they're saying, well, this is aggression against a Christian school. Well, they're only Christian when it's helpful to them. They're not. It's not in the curriculum. It's not in the classroom. It's not there every day. And so don't be fooled by the PR marketing. Don't be fooled by people making these bold statements. Really get to know faculty, administrators, the core of it. I mean, at Bellhaven, not just all of our faculty are are strong Christians, but so are our maintenance team and everybody else who works here across the board in every single position. As I tell them, I want them to have a visible faith. I don't want to have to question whether or not you're Christian. I want your face to shine out in everything that you do. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite stories, I was coming across the campus one day, and we had some maintenance guys who were clearly fixing a water leak. They dug a deep hole. They were down there about 4 feet in the mud, and they were up to their knees and water and all. And I came up to the edge of the hole in my wingtip shoes and double-breasted suit, and I'm looking over the edge trying to look caring. And I said, guys, what are you doing? And they looked up and they said, we're educating students for Christ. And I said, yep, that's exactly what you're doing. Your gift is to fix the plumbing that allows all that to happen. And that's kind of the spirit of our place and what a Christian college to me ought to be.
Okay, that's good. So if I was going to summarize what you're alluding to in terms of religion versus biblical studies departments, biblical studies focuses on studying the text of Scripture as true and how we can be changed by it, as opposed to it sounds like religion departments are more sociology. It's more the study of what people think about God, not making any claim to whether it's accurate or not. It's just understanding the ways that people have developed religious practices and beliefs, right?
Yeah, it really is. And a lot of those come in schools that did have a historical Christian foundation and have moved away from that. So they just keep it in their history, but in their wanting to stay in that arena, it's become a critical discipline rather than an encouraging discipline.
Well, that's one really helpful distinction and thing to look for. What are some other key things to look for, to be considered? I know you've worked with thousands of families in the college choice process, as you'd mentioned just even today with some students. What are some other key distinctions or signs that could be helpful in the process of choosing a college?
Yeah, this is such a big decision for families because, you know, all the research shows that the major priorities and process and objectives for your life will be set during your college years. Whether you go to college or not, it's during that time that stuff gets cemented. What your goals are going to be, your education, your career, your type of relationships, your family, type of person you're going to marry, all those kinds of things get set during those college years. So to do that within a Christian environment that's supportive and willing to help you work through the big questions of life, I think is really critical. But how do you find that is hard, because for most families, they're making this decision 1, 2, 3, 4 times. That's all. And, you know, I've been making this decision all the time because that's what I do all the time and through all the years and helping families. So I've really got it down to two questions to ask, because the view books won't help you. You know, I mean, all schools, you get the view books and we send them out too. And most families, if you're a senior, you probably got a box of them and all the pictures look good and all happy faces. And they all say the same thing. You know, you're valued here. You're not a number. And we've won every award there ever is in higher education. And we're the best that there is. They all say the same thing. They all got the same picture. They all got a picture of a student sitting by a lake playing a guitar. You know, and a lot of those schools don't even have a lake. And we at least have a lake and we stage the same picture. But so the view books don't tell you a lot. Here's what tells you a lot. Ask two questions. The first one is this: are these kind of people I would like to be like? Because the nature of higher education is you tend to take on the values, the priorities, the style, the nature of the people that you study with, both students and faculty. So as you're doing a campus visit, you know, I mean, look at the flowers and look at the buildings and all that stuff, but look at the people and keep asking the question, are these the kind of people I would like to be like? Because that, for good or for bad, and too often in higher education, it's for bad. That is the nature of it. Some of the research in higher ed tells us the students will make a decision whether or not to go to school when they make a campus visit within 7.5 minutes of getting out of the car, which essentially means, wow, did I like the place? Did it feel good? Does it look good?
Yeah.
And all that matters. I mean, our campus is charming and beautiful and a historic neighborhood, and we're really proud of what we've got. I love the buildings, the whole thing, but that's not the education.
Mm-hmm.
So that's question one. Are these the kind of people I'd like to be like? Second question is much more specific, and that is to ask the school, what do you require of all students? College students are incredibly busy, and every department has great demands. I mean, we're tops in the arts. We're the only 34 schools in the nation accredited in all four of the major arts: music, theater, visual art, and dance. We're one of those 34. So it's us and Ohio State and University of California and Juilliard. I mean, and we're the only Christian college working at that level in the arts, and creative writing, all these kinds of things. So arts are busy. Athletes are busy. Everybody's busy. STEM students are in the labs. Everybody's busy. So you can't require much of everybody. So I encourage families to ask, what do you require of everybody? And it shows you what their core values are as an institution. So we require, Bellhaven, I'll give you that as an example. We require four things of every student. First is we require a freshman course called BU101, which is designed to identify their gifts. We do testing to help students identify their gifts and how to use those gifts best for success in college and in life. And during that, we'll also start their career plan. We want to start their career plan when they're a freshman, not when they're a senior. So we begin right there with BU101 focused on their gifts. Secondly, we require what we call our worldview curriculum. That comes in their sophomore year. This is the general core that all of us took and went to college. And what we do is we build that in a synchronized way so we can understand how a Christian worldview has stood up through the tests of time and how our worldview is shaped. So the courses students will take in literature that year, literature, history, philosophy, and major themes of the Bible are all synchronized over the same amount of time period. So if you're studying the Renaissance in history, you're also studying the literature and you're understanding how the church developed during that time. And you can see how the ideas of a Christian worldview developed, because your worldview really matters. The third thing we require of everybody is chapel. And we only have it once a week. We don't want chapel to be a burden. We want it to be a blessing. And I speak in all chapels. This fall, we did the whole semester on Christmas. We were saying Christmas carols in August. That was fun. And in the spring, we're going to do it all on Easter. So we have different themes. But I speak in every chapel because worship together for us as a campus is really important. And the fourth is we have a capstone course in their senior year called Kingdom Life, which is designed to help students understand how to balance their career with their family from a biblical perspective. Because I don't care how successful they are in their career, if they're not happy at home, they're not going to be a happy person. So you can tell by that the four things we require of everybody, what we value. We value gifts, we value worldview, we value worship, and we value the family. And I tell students, take that same criteria to every other school you're talking to, ask them what they require of everybody. And if they don't require something of everybody, then I'd be extra cautious, because it tells you they don't have a foundation of values that drives the institution. So those two questions, are these the people I'd like to be like? And what do you require of everybody, gets way past all the clutter and really gets down to the core issue to understand the core of the institution.
That is so helpful. I've never heard that. And this really, I think, can help a lot of folks distill so much information into, here's the key things we need to figure out before making a decision. So thanks for the thought you've put to that and the framing of that.
We will return to the show in just a moment, but first, a word from our sponsor. Do you have a child, relative, or friend preparing for or attending college? What they need most are Christian professors who can help them learn to love God with their hearts and minds during these impressionable years. Global Scholars equips Christian professors to be there for them and walk with them during their years in college. Please visit www.global-scholars.org to learn how you can help equip Christian professors to show Christ's love on a campus near you and around the world. Please also check out the other podcast Stan and Dr. J.P. Moreland do together, Thinking Christianly. whereas this College Faith podcast focuses more on the practical questions of thriving during the college years, the Thinking Christianly podcast is all about the ideas that shape the university, students, our broader culture, and the world. Visit thinkingchristianly.org or download episodes on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to College Faith.
One question that I want to pose, just as devil's advocate. Now, I love what you're doing. I love what Christian colleges and universities do. But let me give you the counter argument, and I'd love to see how you respond to this.
Okay.
You've already said a few things that I think are relevant in terms of reply, but I want to put it to you directly. So as I, just a few years ago, headed off to college, I had a lot of friends who went off to Christian colleges, and I went off to a public university. And I found that as I would go back in summers and reconnect with my friends, actually most of them who had gone to Christian colleges, not all, but most were not doing that well in their faith. They tended to find that they were stagnating a little bit. Their faith wasn't being challenged. It was a little bit mundane. Everybody here kind of believes the same thing. Some of them were being taught falsehoods that they just didn't even evaluate critically because, well, it's a Christian college. My professors say it. It must be true. I, on the other hand, found that I was in a secular context, being challenged in my faith regularly, but found a Christian fellowship, a community on campus that could really be a place of asking questions, discerning truth, being mentored by others who were more mature than I was spiritually and had fought the good fight, so to speak. Maybe they're juniors and seniors who've been down this road a little bit more. So I found coming out of college that I was much stronger in my faith in that environment than many of my friends who had gone to quote unquote Christian universities. Now, there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of, you know, this is a one-off situation for me. I know that. But in general, I can hear my audience asking about that because they might know of similar situations. How do you process that reality?
I think that is so well put and critical to answer. And let me respond in two or three different ways to that. First of all, be thankful God's protection was around you. That's terrific.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think when you are in a somewhat of a hostile environment, Christians find each other, and there's a strengthening of that that is wonderful. It's kind of like working internationally. You work internationally so much. As you know, when you work internationally, you're not so worried about the denominational distinctives between you and the person next to you. You're just glad to find another Christian.
Exactly.
And you hang on to each other. And there's great strength in that. And a lot of students can do that and do it very successfully. Unfortunately, the research shows us about 50% of students who go to a state university who would be considered evangelical in high school lose their faith before they graduate. So that's kind of overwhelming. And families will say, well, we're not that 50%. And I hope so. And I pray that you're not. And there's no guarantees that come to ours. I think probably more the issue that gets to why some of your peers were struggling at other institutions is really important. And that is that a lot of Christian schools, and they've moved away from it in a lot of places, require a faith statement of all students. So there's this, you sign off on, I believe this, this, and this coming in, and I will do all this. And so there's no room for questioning because you made a commitment at the beginning. You already believe it. So how can we even ask the question? And that's one of the things I love about Bellhaven is we do not require a faith statement of students. And I was telling a visitor from campus about that several years ago, whose son was looking at coming. He said, oh, you're like the real world. And I said, yeah, exactly. So all of our faculty are Christians, but all of our students are not. And, you know, we've got some very vibrant Christians, and we've got students where when I offered in chapel, if you don't have a Bible and need one, go to the bookstore and get one. I'll pay for it. And I had 25 take me up on it. So, that's to me a good place. Good place, because the questions can be asked. We don't require a faith statement, but if you require a faith statement coming in, the dialogue will be shallow. It has to be, because you're already committed to it. So how can you question God? How can you question some of the hard, difficult questions of faith in that environment? And so that's why, like, where we are, every school is different in how they do it. But, you know, on the other side of that, I've had an awful lot of students through the years go to a state school. Mom and dad wanted to go there. They wanted to go there. They went for the big football program and the whole thing, and they loved what it was. And then I get that phone call in the sophomore year. My son is in trouble. My daughter is in trouble. Is there any way you can take him in? And I have had not just dozens of those phone calls, but way, way too many of those phone calls. They've crashed and burned, and then they come to Belhaven or a place like Belhaven, and they find a restoration. I can't guarantee it. I can't, wouldn't be foolish to guarantee it. But you look at all the factors. So my advice to families is, if you're really strong, yeah, go for it, and you can do it. But unless you're solid as a rock and can be, I encourage them, go to a Christian college for your undergraduate, and then go do a master's and a doctorate at advanced levels at a state university where you're prepared to stand up to the tests.
Okay, thanks. And, you know, you also mentioned that things have changed a lot in the last 40 years.
They've changed a lot in the last 10 years, in the last 5 years. It's the rate of change is going through the roof. It's really pretty remarkable.
Well, and that's, for me, what I have to keep reminding myself, because I do think about college as my experience. And I graduated, truth be told, in 1985. So it's been a minute. And the reality is different these days. And I just had somebody else on the podcast who was sharing the same thing, been in campus ministry for 30 some years. And he said, yeah, it's harder and harder to map my experience onto what's going on these days. So that's another important point you made earlier. I want to reemphasize. Well, let's talk a little bit about the financial costs. That's on everyone's mind. And it's a huge determining factor for choice of university. And you've put out a nice little booklet about the real cost of college and some videos that go along with it. I really enjoyed perusing that. I'd like you to say a little bit about that. So just to start with, give us your guidance on how to manage the cost of higher education and maybe some of the high points that you have written about, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, it's a critical question. It's an expensive decision. And but I think so often families don't understand how higher education is priced and the ramifications of it. And they're looking at that initial tuition bill rather than looking at the bigger issues and how it can be handled. So I just got frustrated with how many complex questions there were. And so I wrote this paper, The Real Cost of College, Insights from an Insider, to tell you how that all gets put together. It's 17 pages long. Nobody wants to read the whole thing, but go to different sections. Go to the section about debt. Go to the section about community college. Go to the section about flagships. Go to the section about scholarships. And it can give you some good guidance. But let me hit on a few things. But let me tell you the bottom line first, and I'll brag on Belhaven a little bit. And I can show a student that they will save $60,000 by coming to Belhaven instead of a state university. I can prove the numbers. And if you go to the paper, it's there. And we're talking about a lot of money. Now, I can't do that on initial tuition. You have to look at the bigger picture. And if you look at the bigger picture over the first 6 years of your life in college and beyond, $60,000, that's a lot of money. And so people assume they can't afford private Christian higher education. Well, I can prove them they can't. But let me hit on a few things that are important about this, the whole idea of college prices. The first is, scholarship is not the measure of your worth. And so many students are making a decision on college because I got this scholarship for athletics, or I got this scholarship for academics, or I got this scholarship for this. And we tend to connect our worth with that scholarship. And related to that is, the size of the scholarship is not necessarily related to what you're going to pay. So let's say you got a $15,000 scholarship from Belhaven. Our tuition is about $28,000. So you got a $15,000 scholarship, and you say, man, that's great. Well, somebody else gave you a $25,000 scholarship, And you say, well, I'm going to go there because they value me more. Well, their tuition is $50,000. You're going to pay a whole lot more there than you are here. So look at the bottom line costs. So I'd say that. Another issue, and I just tick through a number of these quickly, is that be cautious of tuition reset schools. A lot of schools are doing that now. They're taking their tuition way down. What happens is nobody pays at private higher education. Nobody pays a sticker price. Nobody. So everybody gets some help at some level. And that can be for your merit. It can be for your need. It can be a lot of things. We are a Division III school. So our athletes don't get athletic scholarships, but they get the same scholarships everybody else gets. And then I love it because they're playing because they want to play. And if they quit that team, they still get the scholarship. I love that. And that's what athletics ought to be. But the tuition reset schools, let's say a school was at $45,000 tuition and you got a $25,000 scholarship. Well, they take, you know, they drop that to $30,000 tuition. Well, they cut the scholarship the same amount. If you're paying the same amount, it's just that the sticker looks less.
Okay.
But usually those schools are in some level of trouble, and that's why they're doing that.
In other words, they reduce tuition so that people look at that number and think, oh, this is great. But then those costs are increased other places to offset that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, the scholarships are reduced the same amount.
Okay.
Yeah. So the gap becomes the same, even though the sticker price looks less expensive.
Got it.
And that's where people get caught. And they think, well, I'll go to that school because they just announced their tuition went down by $15,000. Well, so did their scholarships. They went down by $15,000 too.
Okay.
Because that's how this business works.
Yeah. You still got the same costs.
Same costs, but it's different sticker price.
Right.
But again, nobody pays a sticker price. You know, we used to talk about it in cars, but now cars, a lot of times you buy a car, you pay the sticker price. They don't discount like they used to. But schools have a lot of flexibility in how they can make that scholarship package come about. Okay. But another topic is, remember, location matters. I mean, my students who are here from California and New York think we are the biggest bargain in the world. And my students from Mississippi think we're expensive. So we are, depending on where you're located, the cost can be a lot lower. And then look at living expenses. I know I worry about some students going to public institutions, and after their freshman year, they're going to kick them out of the residence hall because they don't have room. And then they've got to find a place to live on their own, and how that gets figured in. Textbooks are incredibly expensive. You know, we worked hard to go with a lot of free resources. Our faculty are really thoughtful in how to get used textbooks so students can get used textbooks and that kind of stuff. But a lot of schools, man, you can spend $1,000-$1,200 a semester for textbooks. And watch the fees. The fees are really big. You know, state schools especially don't want to raise tuition because the legislature gets at them if they raise tuition. So they say, well, we're only going to go up 3%. Isn't that great? But then behind the scenes, they raise their fees way up, and that's how they get their money.
What type of fees?
Oh, student activity fee, parking fee, technology fee, you name it, they got a fee. A lot of fees for STEM classes, fees for arts classes, you know. And that's where they make the money in order to keep the tuition low. So the amount you pay is still pretty high. When you put all that stuff together, this gets to be a very hard question to answer. So you really have to drill down the specifics. And I've had, you know, not many families, but once in a while I'll get a family who send me a spreadsheet, and they got the three schools they're looking at, and they'll show me, you were right, Belhaven's cheaper. And I didn't believe it. And it's great to see. Because it really does come down to specifics of who you are and how you look at it and how you approach it. And then for us, there are a couple of very unique things. You said I could talk about Belhaven a little bit, so let me just tell you two things that are unique for us. One is that we offer all of our students, our traditional students, we offer them all a fifth-year tuition free if they're a double major. So what that means is if they declare to be a double major and that pushes them into their fifth year, for one semester or two, they pay no tuition the fifth year. And that allows our students to be much better prepared for the world. So they can major in theater and in communications, or they can, you know, major in biology and in business. So they put together whatever two combinations they want to put together, but it's free if it goes into the fifth year. Mm. And then the other thing we've done, and nobody's copied us. There's no other school in the country. When I did that, I thought, we're going to get copied everywhere. Nobody else is doing it.
How long have you been doing it?
We've been doing it about 5 years now. Okay. Yeah. And I would say a third of our students are double majors.
Ah.
And they're just, man, talk about a stronger resume. You come out with a double major, sure. So much stronger. And they can do it without the fear of the money. Because if, you know, if it pushes them to the fifth year, they can go for free. And then the other thing, we came through COVID, and after the second year, students were so down and discouraged, and the high school students coming out, you know, had been lost their senior year. And I thought, we got to do something to get them look up. So we put in an idea, and we said, if you come as a traditional student, stay and graduate, we'll give you a free master's degree. A free online master's degree. We have 20 some master's degrees that are all online, from MBA to leadership to public administration, health administration, teaching, whatever it may be. And they can take that degree right after they graduate, or they can take it 10, 20 years later. We don't care. It's online. They don't have to stay in Jackson to do it. And it really is a great benefit. So for us, we're allowing them to have fifth year tuition free for a double major and a free master's degree. Well, that's worth a lot of money. And then you look at state universities where the average time to graduate is 5.5 years because you can't get the classes on time. And so they're having to pay tuition longer, and they're not graduating as soon as our students are graduating. So they're longer to get into the workplace. You total that all up, look at my paper, $60,000 plus difference. It really is amazing if people will look at this big question. Yes, our initial price is going to be higher. We'll help you figure out a way to pay it. But in the long run, you're going to save a ton of money by coming to Belhaven or a place like Belhaven.
Thanks. That's helpful. Are there other principles or questions that you think ought to be asked in this discernment process?
Yeah, I think it comes, maybe a couple of things are really important. One is, well, people will say, well, I'll go to Christian college if God provides the money. Okay, you know, God ought to provide the money, but is that how you buy a car? Is that how you bought your house? Is that how you planned your career? You know, if God sends something out of the sky that you didn't expect, that's the only way you're going to do it? I don't think so. I'm not sure that's biblical. And with good planning and thoughtfulness and looking at the complexity of the risk of a public institution over a private Christian college, you know, the costs are really in our favor. So I think that's really important. Another big question everybody asks is about debt. And I don't want to go into debt to go to school. Okay, I get that. There's a lot of bad information about debt. First of all, most of the debt is in graduate degrees nationally. Mm-hmm. And so we're giving you a free master's. So you're not going to have any debt for a master's degree. And so that's going to come for free. But most of the debt's there. But, you know, when it comes down to debt, there's good debt and there's bad debt. You don't take debt for something that depreciates in value. So if I go buy a car and I buy that on time, the second I drive off the lot, it's less valuable than it was when I left it on the lot. In education, you're putting investment into your mind, and that is going to be so much more productive than any other debt you could possibly take. And the numbers show you'll make about $1.5 million more in your lifetime than if you don't go to school. So good debt and bad debt. So it's interesting to me that, you know, some families say, well, we don't want to take debt, but they've got a mortgage. And they're paying for their car on time, and they borrowed for other kinds of things, and they got credit card debt, but they won't take debt for colleges. What's the line there that God's trying to direct you to? All of a sudden, you're going to have this attitude of no debt when it comes to Christian college versus going to the state school. Yes, you can go to the state school, or you can go to the community college, and you can save money on the initial price, but you're going to pay in the long run. You know, my kids, just one more quick story on that. My kids were homeschooled. They're in their late 20s now, but they were homeschooled. And so when we got ready to come to Belhaven, I thought we got to get them in a class to at least experience what a class is like. So we went to the local community college and enrolled them in two classes. And first of all, it was terribly hard to get in the structure. And I know the business. And I finally had to call the president to figure out how to get registered. we make this stuff easy. But we got them into class. They started the class with 25 students in their math class. At the end of the class, there were three students left in that math class. So two of them were mine. Wow. Because there is no admission requirement to community college. If you want iron sharpens iron, you're not going to get it there. In many state schools, you're not going to get it there because their admission standards are lower as well. You know, there's a cost to this. It's way beyond the money. Mm. Academically, spiritually, we've talked about, and in quality of life and in setting the kind of focus of life that's really going to stand up to the tests of life that are going to come. And it's not if the tests of life are going to come. They are going to come. So mm-hmm. be prepared. Invest in what you're doing. And, of course, Jesus, you know, he spent 30 years preparing for 3 years of ministry. And so to put this time and investment in ahead of time is really critical to do it right.
Right, right, right. Good word. Absolutely. Well, you mentioned graduate studies, and I'd like to get your thoughts a little more on that. How important do you think graduate education is these days for students who are preparing for their careers? When I went to college, it wasn't a big deal.
It wasn't a big deal. No, and it wasn't when I went. And when my grandfather got his master's, that was a huge deal back in the 30s.
Yeah, sure.
That he would get, and my dad got his doctorate. That was a big deal back in the 60s.
Right.
But now it's really pretty standard for a lot of employers expect a master's degree. You don't stand out without a master's degree. It often doesn't matter what it's in, but it matters that you have it. And employers have just changed their perspective on it. So there's that end of employment. There's a whole nother end of employment saying, come as a high school student and we'll train you. Come to Amazon and we'll give you the skills training. You don't need to go to college. Now, that's fine too. And that may work for some people. But just remember, they train you for their job. And if you can't do their job or you don't want to do that job, what are you going to have? You're not an educated person to have the flexibility to go do other things as well. So a master's degree is almost becoming standard. I'm just kind of amazed at how expected it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Roger, this has been really insightful to learn things that you've seen for many years. And I've had glimpses of, but has helped me put some things into context. As we draw to a close, is there anything else you want to make sure we touch on?
You know, I would encourage families to just really commit this decision to the Lord, and God will give you that settled peace that you know it's right. But when you make the decision, stick with it. The number one thing employers are looking for are people who stick with it. And college is going to be the greatest years of your life, hopefully. It ought to be fun. It ought to be energetic. It ought to be friendship built. So many good things of community out of it. That ought to happen. But it's also tough. And there are times you're not going to get the grade you thought you ought to deserve, and times you're not going to get picked for the role in the play or to start on the team. And there's going to be times that are tough. And unfortunately, the nature of higher education today is when those times get tough, students bail and they go someplace else. They change their circumstance rather than pressing through. And I think God made that decision clear going into it, then know that decision is solid and stick with it. And when you persevere through those tough times, that's when you grow and you really become the person God wants you to be. God puts challenges in our path to prepare us for what's ahead. There's never been a challenge that he puts in front of us. It's not a preparation for what's ahead. And when those tough times come, when you push through and you will graduate where you're committed to start, it makes all the difference in the world, because then you develop a pattern of life. And people who bail when it's hard then tend to bail in jobs, they bail in churches, they bail in marriage, and it becomes a pattern for life. rather than the perseverance that allows you to really grow and be successful. So I encourage families, as you make the decision, stick with it. Know God sent you to that place. God handpicked you to go there. And if God picked you to go there, he's going to help you be successful.
Good word. Appreciate that. Well, Roger, in addition to the Belhaven website, which I will link to in the show notes, is there anywhere else listeners can go to get more on some of the things you've touched on that you recommend?
You know, our website is really dynamic and interactive and easy to get to. So if you come to belhaven.edu, it's all easy to find. And the paper on or the videos on the real cost of college are there. Lots of good info and lots of videos that kind of let you see the people. But come for a campus visit. One of the things we do, if you come for a campus visit, we give you an extra $1,000 scholarship your freshman year. And I think that's a nice boost to families because when you come see the place, you know, students want to come. But also for those who can't come to Jackson, maybe you might be older or needing a master's degree or a doctoral degree. You know, we've got that all online as well. So those are great options in addition. But yeah, belhaven.edu is the best place.
Thanks for the conversation. Thanks for your years of service in higher education and sharing your wisdom with us.
Treat for me to share with you, and I'm thankful for all your work, and I pray God's best for all the scholars around the world you're helping and the families you're helping make this important decision.
Well, appreciate it. To God be the glory. That brings us to the end of this edition of the College Faith Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this conversation at the intersection of Christian conviction and higher education. Be sure to check out today's show notes at collegefaith.net/podcasts, where you can find more information and links to the resources we discussed. If you found this podcast helpful, please help spread the word by liking my College Faith Facebook page at facebook.com/collegefaith and pass this show on to others who may enjoy hearing our conversation. Please do visit our sponsor, Global Scholars, to help equip Christian professors to be salt and light for Christ on their campuses. Until next time, this is Stan Wallace encouraging you to love the Lord your God with both heart and mind during the university years and beyond.